Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 430 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by a former heavyweight world title challenger, my very good friend, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you this week, my friend?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. That's the truth. We're going to dive straight into the review part. The review part's not going to be too long at all. Obviously, we're going to then welcome our special guest. It's going to be the undefeated lightweight knockout artist, Mr. Sam Noakes. And then in part two, we'll get to the preview part and the news before that. Anyway, let's dive straight into the review part. We're going to start here at the Virgin Hotels Las Vegas in Nevada, USA. It was live on DAZN, which was nice. Three fights to mention. In the end, we saw Arnold Barboza Jr. move to 29-0. I expected this one to go the distance. He got in there with Zolesani Ndongeni, who I believe is from what's that country? They send a few people over. I think Julius Ndongo's from there. It's completely escaped me for the moment. But anyway, Ndongeni, you know, he's a tough, durable guy. Gone the distance with Devin Haney. He was the only man to take Ernesto Mercado the distance. Obviously, Mercado's knocked out everyone but Ndongeni. And he got in there with Arnold Barboza, who's not really known for, you know, a big punch or anything like that. But credit to Barboza. Like I say, you know, accurate stuff. Didn't really waste many shots. And he did get to Ndongeni in the end. The referee was having a look in the corner a few times. And I think they kind of, the doctors and all that, they kind of persuaded the corner to, you know, to retire him on the stool, which they did after eight rounds. He looked quite exhausted, actually, in Ndongeni, which again was a bit surprising. But, yeah, on paper, that goes down as a really good win there for Arnold Barboza Jr. So, yeah, credit to him. Moving up the card once again, a real, real shock. And I am absolutely devastated for friend of the show, O'Hara Davies, now 25-3. He was TKO'd in the very first round. What a shock, by Ismael Barroso. We knew that the power was real. We just didn't expect it, you know, to end like that, especially not in the first round. Barroso, like I say, was very unfortunate not to have beaten Rolando Romero last time out. But I think he's, what, 40, 41 years of age, 42 years of age, whatever he is. And you know, like I say, like he just caught O'Hara with a shot, and yeah, O'Hara was awful. I mean, he went down obviously twice in the end. It was for the WBA interim world super lightweight title, by the way. But he gets caught the first time, goes down, gets back up, and O'Hara's never had great feet anyway, but he gets back up, doesn't move at all. He's all stiff-legged, you know. The referee was kind of saying, do you want to continue? He put his hands up, but you know, he didn't think, oh, I've been hurt by a shot, I've been put down, I'm dazed, I'm going to get on the bike a little bit here, move around, try and make him miss, try and make him catch me and, you know, get a few more seconds to recover. He instead decides to just stand there and trade with Barroso, which of course was a crazy move. So he ends up getting into a firefight right after being put down. He then obviously takes another big shot, goes down again, gets back up. And when he gets back up for the second time, once again, raises his arms, you know, he's ready to continue. But the referee didn't like what he saw in O'Hara Davies' eyes and decided to call it off. So that is a real big upset. I'm not entirely sure how big an underdog Barroso was. But like I say, for a knockout for Barroso, that would have been big money. And certainly for a first round knockout, it would have been crazy. Yeah, Barroso 25-4 with two draws. O'Hara Davies, like I say, 25-3. I really do feel for O'Hara Davies because he's had a tough time in recent times, you know, politically. Obviously, we all know he was with Matrim, and then that kind of went a little bit sour. There was a bit of, you know, on the inside, there was a little bit of a problem there between, I think, Eddie Hearn and O'Hara Davies. And O'Hara Davies, I don't think, is the smartest guy in the world. I think sometimes he was influenced to be a certain way. I've literally, I'm not going to name names, but I've literally seen people telling him what to say to basically trash talk at the crowd, you know, the fans of an opposing fighter. I've seen him be fed words, you know, shout that out. And egged on, and you know, and then when it all goes the other way and people think he's the bad guy, he's the villain, then those people that were telling him what to say they turn with the crowd as well and point the finger at him. So yeah, he's had a tough time. Obviously it went sour, he split with Eddie Hearn, suffered the loss to Josh Taylor, fair enough. Suffered the loss to Jack Catterall, but then he rebuilt his career and went in the Golden Contract tournament thing and wind up winning it. And I still don't quite understand what the hell all that was about. You were told that you'd get this massive contract, a big deal with a lead-in promoter, and he didn't sign to anyone. And in the end, he was quite inactive. Obviously had a great win against Lewis Ritson, looked really good there, and then he was out the ring for quite a long time going into this one. But you know, I can't make any excuses for him, but I do think it was his first fight with Golden Boy. I was happy that he was signed to them, because I feel like a few bridges have unfortunately been burned in the UK for him, and obviously not a lot of people like him, to be honest with you. I know him a little bit better than that. You know, I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's actually a really nice guy when you know, underneath those layers. But yeah, I think this is a bad thing for him now. I almost feel like he's going to kind of dwindle off and disappear. You know, I can't see him coming back from this. This was his big golden opportunity, and obviously he's been stopped in a round by, you know, this quote-unquote old man. You know, he's again one of those guys. Someone said he looks like Luis Ortiz's dad, which made me laugh. But, you know, he looks a lot older than 40. But, yeah, tough stuff for O'Hara, and I don't know where he goes from here. All the best to him, though. And then in the main event, Virgil Ortiz Jr., now 20-0. Again, all knockouts still has that 100% record intact. A first round TKO against Garner's Frederick Lawson, now 30-4. We knew it was always gonna end inside the distance. I don't think anyone expected, you know, for it to go the distance, like I say. And Virgil Ortiz, for me, I felt would always win in the first half of the fight, although I didn't think we'd see it as early as the very first round. The stoppage was a bit dodgy from Tony Weeks. I think everyone in boxing has, you know, said their piece on that. So I don't want to kick him when he's down. But it did seem a dodgy stoppage. He seemed like he was maybe hurt by a jab in the build-up to the stoppage. He kind of went back to the ropes. And then there was a lot of punches from Virgil Ortiz that were unanswered by Lawson, but at the same time most of them were to the body, and a few of them missed as well. And I think the moment Tony Weeks jumped in to stop it, it was the wrong time, and it looked worse than perhaps what it was. And that's me being as fair as I can be to Tony Weeks. It was a bad looking stoppage, and even Lawson, he looked a little bit confused, like, what, you know, like it was bad. The whole crowd started booing. You know, Virgil Ortiz wasn't too pleased with it either. So, yeah, it wasn't a good look from Tony Weeks. And that's, that. You know, we talk about Barroso. He's the guy that stopped Barroso. You know, he's the guy that jumped in when Romero, quote-unquote, got the stoppage. So, yeah, bad stuff for Tony Weeks once again. He's being talked about for the wrong reasons. We don't like to see officials make mistakes, but it happens. Eddie, did you see any of those two fights there?
Yeah, actually, I saw the Virgil Ortiz. I didn't see a lot of the one before it, but I definitely seen that fight with the stoppage. Actually, I did. Actually, you know what? I'm lying. I saw O'Hara Davies. I did. I saw him, and it was kind of unfortunate. I was starting to watch it because we were doing videos that day as well, but we had it planned.
And, you know, I heard, you know, we talked about him and we talked about the fight. And I kept remembering that Rowley was saying how hard of a puncher the old man was. You know, how people were talking about how, you know, how bad he looked and, you know, the old man almost beat him and all of that. And Rowley said he was the hardest puncher he's ever been in the ring with. He said he would hit him in his arm. He would hit him anywhere he hit him. He said anytime he hit him, it just would have a massive effect. And he just, you know, he tried not to show it, obviously. But he said, man, this guy can really punch. So, you know, I heard that before. And then I heard about the fighter. He was fighting O'Hara Davis. And I'm thinking, okay, you know. And they talk about, you know, this is a big time. This is a time to shine for O'Hara Davis. And I'm like, damn, he's in there with this guy. This guy actually might prove to be a bit of a problem. Sure enough, he gets in there first round, catches him. And he could just never, it just never seemed that he ever recovered. And I guess the power is real. And as far as the Virgil Ortiz fight, I think that was probably one of the worst stoppages I've seen. I'm not trying to be, you know, because I think Tony Weeks normally is a pretty good ref. You know what I mean? I haven't really had any problems of any kind with him and his, you know, his work. But in this particular fight, that was a pretty bad stoppage. I could see that the guy got hurt from a jab. I think he got hit behind the ear a little bit with it. And that's probably what, you know, what started it. And then Virgil Ortiz, you know, came in, started picking up the punch count, throwing a lot of shots. But most of them did not land. The ones that did were, you know, grazing and, you know, either that or to the body. And then, and like you said, Joe, at the time he stepped in, it was just not a good look. It was pretty bad. And I know if he could go back, he would definitely have changed that. But it's no shade to Ortiz. He went out there and did what he was supposed to do. You know, you heard a guy, you jump on him and you start putting them hands on them as much as you can to get the guy to step in if possible, or, you know, to, you know, raise your chances of getting a knockout. But that was a pretty bad stoppage, man. I have one of the worst I've seen, I'm not going to lie. But, hey, at the end of the day, you know, he probably was going to get the stoppage at some point anyway. I guess they just, you know, removed the damage that he would have got further in the fight. So, hey, I still think it's unfair to the guy and unfortunate, but this is boxing and things happen.
Yeah, no, for sure. And just to wrap up the review part, the final card to mention, it went down at the Acca Shriners Center in Richmond, Virginia, USA. Over here, Dusty Hernandez Harrison, friend of the show, still undefeated, 36-0 with a draw. A TKO for him in round 4 against Norberto Gonzalez, now 24-15. That brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated lightweight knockout artist. He's from Maidstone. His hands are made of stone. It is, of course, Mr. Sam Noakes. Sam, welcome back on the show, my man, and Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thank you. And you, sir. I'll never, ever get bored of listening to that intro, you know. That is Parker. I love that.
I never get bored of saying it, my friend. So, Sam, we last spoke back in September. At the time, you were getting ready to fight Carlos Perez on the Joyce Zhang 2 undercard. You were finally going to be boxing on the same card as your brother, Sean. The fight ended up falling through, though, on fight week. You were gutted. I remember you posted a video. You were just in disbelief. However, thankfully, the fight got rescheduled for December. You did manage to end the year with yet another knockout victory. Talk me through that fight. You finally managed to get Perez in the ring with you in the end, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a messy fight, all in all. I mean, I genuinely thought that it would be a tough fight. Like, obviously, watched him against Corey Gibbs, and he gave a good account of himself, like, won a few rounds, and I thought, Corey, you know what, he might be slippery and hard to get hold of. Maybe drag me down the back end of the fight. But when we got in there, I just think it was apparent from, like, the first round. I don't know, he just was holding on, he was falling over a lot, and he was just like showing signs of distress, you know. So, ended up obviously where I was margin, like going on forward, and he was trying to hold, and that ended up being quite messy. But I don't know what game plan he had, if he had one. So, but yeah, we got the win. I mean, obviously, first fight for a while, so I was a little bit eager, so probably didn't help how messy it was, but the knockout streak continues.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to be sat ringside at York Hall that night. I felt Perez's footwork was really good, but it just seemed, as you say, like he wasn't really interested in throwing any punches or taking any. It was an awkward style, and like you say...
Yeah, it was just weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just don't know what was going on. It was holding, it was just... He was all over the place, wasn't it? It was... I felt a bit sorry for you, to be honest, because it was such a awkward style. Like, you were clearly frustrated a bit. You just wanted to fight, you know?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you got to be able to deal with it. I mean, I don't mind being frustrated about some geezer not trying to hit me. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just more so that you can't get any good press from that, you know? Like, you didn't have time to display much. And it was just like, as you say, a messy. And it's just sort of... it was good to get, as I said, good to get back in there in the field with a fight night. But as in, for like sharing what you're about, that didn't have no time to do that. It was just more of like a little bit of a wrestling thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And later on that same night, your domestic rival Gavin Gwynn made his Queensbury debut, and after being dominated for large parts of the fight, managed to get a retirement win out of nowhere over the 47-year-old Emiliano Marsili. I know you didn't actually watch the fight from ringside, I think Sean did, but have you had a chance to watch that back yet?
I haven't had a chance to watch it back yet, but I know some people were saying that he was having it rough, I think. But you can't judge a fight one night. I mean, I think the 50-year-old boxed out his skin by all accounts. I don't think anyone expected it to be like that. But I need to watch that fight, really. I do need to watch that.
And yes, very exciting times to be a lightweight with Queensbury. There's a lot of names in the mix now. Your first fight of 2024 has been announced, so you'll be boxing the undefeated Luis Silvestre on February 10th at the Copper Box. In your last three fights, you've taken away two undefeated records, so has Luis Silvestre. Aside from that, what do we know about him, Sam?
I mean, I sparred him my first year as a pro. He's a very good boxer, you know. Like, he moves well. Like, his head movement's good. Like, he's gonna he will be tricky to get hold of, but I will get hold of him nonetheless, you know. Like, I think it's nice to be in that kind of live fight, and like, you got a live opponent. Like, if I have a bad night or I box rubbish, like, this geezer is gonna come to win, you know. So it gives you that edge, and it makes you train that a little bit harder, and it makes you want it that a little bit more. And I mean, like, I've come too far, put up with too much shit to then trip at the first real hurdle, you know. So I'm going in there all gun blazing, ready to go, you know.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that you'd sparred him in the past. I was going to say, how do you see the fight actually playing out? I think as fans, we know what to expect from you now. But Silvestre is a weird one. You know, I was looking, obviously, he's only got 4 knockouts from 13 wins, but they've all been against either extremely durable journeymen who don't tend to get stopped, or guys that have never been stopped. So it makes me think that maybe he's a bigger puncher than his record suggests he is.
Yeah, I'm not overlooking this guy in the slightest. I've not looked into that. He's not like, oh, he's only got four KOs that he can't punch. Do you know what I mean? Like, as I said, like, he's a good fighter. Like, he's what, seventh, eighth in the country, and I'm only fifth. So realistically, you couldn't look for more of a 50-50 there, you know. So I think, for my part, just got to not be careless walking forward, and then, like, just because he will tire. Like, I've watched previous fights before, and he moves unbelievable in the first few rounds, but then he does tire, and obviously once them feet slow down, then it's game on, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. February the 10th will obviously be headlined by the rescheduled Hamza Shiraz and Liam Williams fight. How do you see that main event going?
I think Shiraz is probably going to be a little bit fresh, you know. I think, like, obviously, Liam Williams, they're both nice fellas, and I wish both the best, but I just think Shiraz has been looking solid, you know, and depends. Obviously, if you judge Williams off his last performance, he looked unreal as well, but I just think he might be a little bit too fresh, you know, like, one sort of coming through the ranks, like, Shiraz is on the way up, isn't he, and then Liam sort of at the back end of his career, you know, so... Probably would favour more to Shiraz, but as I said, may the best man win, innit? I don't want to upset nobody.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's an interesting one, but I get what you're saying. And Hamza as well, the size of him as well, he's massive. Yeah. Another fighter you've been linked to is Mark Chamberlain. Like I was saying earlier, there's some really good fights that can be made just amongst the Queensbury stable at the moment. How do you think the fight would go if you were to get that Chamberlain fight at some point this year?
Some point this year? I genuinely believe that I will stop him. I mean, I'm not going in there overlooking. I never overlook anyone. I never do. You know, like, I've seen distress signals in his previous fights, and I just think, like, if that was someone who got a bit more of a punch behind them and a little bit stronger, like, as him for strength-wise, there's no comparison, like, do you know what I mean? So, he's got an unbelievable left hand. He has. But I think once that don't work, he sort of falls to pieces a little bit, you know? So... But that's for whenever that gets made, isn't it? But I reckon I've got that every day of the week.
I'd love to see it, and I agree. Yeah.
I don't think you'll be far away anyway. I don't think you'll be far away.
Oh, that's teasing. I love it. I hope we see it. What is happening with your brother Sean, by the way, mate? What's next for him?
I think he's either March or April. He had physio the other day, and I think he's now back sparring. So, yeah, he should be back soon. I think he's itching to get back in there, lose the old Christmas weight, get rid of that.
Excellent. And this weekend, my final real question. It seems like it's been ages now since the fight first got made. It was delayed, obviously. Britain's Callum Smith challenges Artur Beterbiev. How do you see that one going? Can't blink.
Mate, I reckon Callum Smith might do it, you know?
Yes.
I think he will.
I hope he does.
Because he's looked unbelievable since he's moved up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I reckon he'll do it.
I'd love to see it. It's just a massive step up, isn't it? It's a massive ask. I think you were there, weren't you, when Beterbiev boxed last time? You was at the yard fight. Yeah, I was talking to you there. So
Sean boxed on it, didn't he?
Yeah, of course. That was just... I mean, he looked devastating there, you know what I mean? He took some punishment, and there were moments for Yard, but, God, he always gets a knockout at some point.
Yeah, that. I mean, you can't rule it off, but, I mean, I don't know. I think, obviously, Callum Smith... Like, no discredit to Yard, obviously, but Callum Smith's like he's been in there with some top guys, you know, and obviously he's been about longer, isn't he? Yeah. So, mate, I could be talking absolute rubbish, I don't know, but I just got a feeling that he might just be able to do enough.
Oh, I cannot wait, man, but hopefully you're right. We, of course, both want the Brit to win. Just before we wrap it up, Sam, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, just you want to sign out with a little message, take it away, my man.
Yeah, just thanks for listening as always, and tune in on the 10th. You're going to be a good fight.
Tune in on the 10th. There we go. Listen, Sam, as always, the pleasure's mine. Thanks for your time. Best of luck for February 10th for the Copper Box, and we'll speak sometime afterwards, my friend.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. Boxer have announced a fight for the undercard of Jonas Mayer, which again goes down on January the 20th at the M&S Bank Arena in Liverpool. We're going to see on the undercard, really interesting fight here, Aaron McKenna in a step up against Linus Udofia. I like that fight there. I would favour McKenna, but I think it's a really interesting fight there. So again, the date for that is January 20th in Liverpool. It's going to be live on Sky Sports, headlined, of course, by Natasha Jonas, friend of the show, and Michaela Mayer, friend of the show. And then, yeah, in another piece of news, it was sent in by Top Rank in my inbox. February the 16th, we're going to see friend of the show, Andres Cortez, stepping in there with Brian Chevalier. And also on the card, Bruce Carrington steps in with Bernard Torres. So all the best to everyone there. Oshaki Foster against Abraham Nova in the main event for that card there. So they were undercard bouts I just mentioned. Again, the date for that is February the 16th, and it goes down at the Madison Square Garden Theatre. It's going to be live on ESPN. That's it for the news. Moving on now to the preview part. We're going to start here. There's not too much to go over, but we're going to start here. I think we've got three cards in total. We're going to start tomorrow, Friday, January the 12th at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Friend of the show, former world champion Julian J. Rock Williams returns to the ring. He's 28-4 with a draw. It's his first fight back since stepping in with the guy. Oh man, he was stopped, and Stephen Edwards in the corner was really angry. Carlos Adames, yeah, he was stopped in that fight. I didn't think there was too much wrong with that stoppage, if my memory serves me right. But anyway, he's back here. It's going to be good to see him back. I thought at one point he was completely done in his career and needed to retire, but he seems like he's not as bad as he was. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I like the guy, so all the best to him. He gets in with Gustavo Vittori, who's 29-15 with a draw. Boxed quite a few names. I think he's been at a few different weights as well, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say he boxed Francis Bartholomew at one point, but he finds himself here at middleweight in an 8-rounder. Moving now to the big one this weekend. It goes down at the Centre Vidéotron in Quebec City, Quebec, Canada. It's going to be live on ESPN and ESPN Plus. It's going to be live on Sky Sports here in the UK. We're going to start with the undercard, of course. I cannot wait for the main event, but let's start with that undercard. A guy that I've been high on for quite a while, he's 25-0, the Frenchman Christian Mbile. He has 21 KOs to his name, boxed twice last year. He gets in, though, with Rohan Murdoch, who is 27-2. It's for the WBC Continental America's Super Middleweight title. People will remember that name, Rohan Murdoch. He's Australian. He boxed Zach Parker back in 2020. He's obviously got two losses, and Zach Parker become the only man to stop him. He stopped him in the 11th round. But Rohan Murdoch was quite a good fighter, quite tough. And I'm going to say this here, even though Mbili likes to stop a lot of people and all the rest of it, I think we're going to see rounds. I'd be very impressed if Mbili can get him out in the first half of the fight. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes a distance. I wouldn't be surprised if we do see a stoppage kind of, you know, in maybe the later part of the fight, maybe this sort of round 8 to round oh, it's only a 10 rounder. Yeah, so yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that one went the distance. Actually, I might go small on Matt to go the distance. I just think he's quite a tough guy. He's come back with 3 wins since the Zach Parker loss, but he has been out of the ring now 10 months. But should be a good one. Christian Mbili, really good fighter. Also on the card, defending his WBO bantamweight world title, Australia's Jason Maloney, 26-2. This will be what his. I think it's his first defense. He gets in with Saul Sanchez, who's 20-2, from California, 26 years of age, known as the Beast. And he's in some really good form, actually. Well, he lost 3 fights ago on a split decision over 10 rounds. And his other loss in his career came in 2019 on another split decision over 10 rounds. So 2 losses, both on split decisions. And he's got some good names up there. Jericho O'Quinn, who we saw knock out Peter McGraw the other week in that absolute shocker where he turned the fight on his head. He knocked Jericho O'Quinn out in 1 round, by the way. Yeah, he's beaten Franklin Gonzalez. Frank Gonzalez as well, who could be a relative, I'm not entirely sure. Brandon Benitez, you know, he's got a couple names on there. And he's in some decent form. He's a decent fighter by all accounts. I haven't seen too much of him, but some people saying they wouldn't be surprised if we see an upset here. We'll have to wait and see. But all the best to Jason Maloney. His twin brother Andrew, of course, has been on the show. And then, yeah, all eyes to the main event, Eddie. Artur Beterbiev, 19-0, defending his IBF, WBC and WBO light heavyweight world titles against the UK's Callum Smith, 29-1. Artur Beterbiev still has that 100% knockout streak going, and for me, he was involved in the best fight, in my opinion, of 2023, when he stopped Anthony Yard in January of last year. So almost a whole year since we last seen Beterbiev in the ring. It's been even longer than that, though, for Callum Smith. He hasn't boxed since August 2022. So that, I think, is quite a bad thing, to be honest with you. He's done six rounds of boxing since the Canelo Alvarez fight 3 years ago. So he's come back, obviously. He's moved up here to light heavyweight since the loss to Canelo. He decided to move up a weight, and he won both fights, second round and fourth round. So that's the six rounds he's done. Fantastic fight. Shame that it got postponed, because I remember at the time we were waiting for it. I don't know what month it was set to take place in. I want to say it was like August or something. And then they announced the postponed date was for January. And I remember thinking, what the hell? That's like 5 months away. Like, that's a crazy delay. I want to say it was about that big of a delay. And yeah, it seems like it's took forever to come around. And I've always been thinking, as soon as Christmas is out of the way, I'm going to be looking forward to this fight here. And here it is. We don't have to wait too much longer. I'm going to come to you first, Eddie. Callum Smith with the height difference. He's always, you know, been a good fighter at range and on the inside. He's a terrific body puncher, even though he's 6'3", and he can really bang. Artur Beterbiev, we've seen what he does. He smells blood, he finds another gear. If he's bleeding himself, he also finds another gear. He's scary, and no one has seemed to solve this puzzle or even come close to it.
Yeah, man, this is a tall, tall task, man. You know, no pun intended in this particular one. But for actually the taller guy, Callum Smith, I think it's going to be... I'm not, you know, he's no slouch, you know. There's no question about it. Callum Smith can fight. He's capable. Like you said, he's a good in fighter, but also good at range. I think he's going to have to stick with the range, to be quite honest, but he's going to have to be capable of, you know, standing and at least keeping Artur Beterbiev from, you know, gaining that momentum. You know what I mean? You can't run around the ring all night trying to outbox a guy and continually giving ground like that, because eventually he's going to catch up to you. You know what I mean? The ring's not, even if the ring was 24 by 24, he's still going to struggle, you know, to keep him off him. So he's going to have to at times be willing to exchange, maybe not exchange necessarily, but to stand and kind of give a stand on solid ground and let his hands go a bit. But I would advise not to do that for too long. Definitely want to keep Beterbiev off balance and all, you know, and off timing. You know what I mean? It would probably be good if he could get him to go, you know, go back a bit, but I doubt that's going to happen. I just, it's hard for me, even with Anthony Yard, you know, Anthony Yard was coming at him and pressing. But if you watch the fight, Anthony Yard started to move a little bit. He, you know, started to give ground a bit because he had to, you know what I mean? Those shots started to hurt after a while, and he probably started to hurt from the beginning. But it's just going to be a very difficult thing to keep Beterbiev off him the entire fight. It's going to be, and this is the thing that, you know, scares me if I'm a supporter of Callum Smith. He's, you know, he does have that grit and that determination and the ability to fight on the inside. And to some degree, it's like when you think about when he fought Joe Smith, and Joe Smith was like, yo, I'm a stand and trade with him. I'm going to go in and I'm going to try to, you know what I mean? I'm going to try to win this fight like that. And it's just like, it's just very unlikely. He seems to have a granite chin, and he's not a bad boxer himself, but he's just a seek and destroy kind of guy. And you have to be able to keep him off balance and offset him. You cannot think you're going to be able to fight him one way the entire fight. It's going to require some adjustment and some creativity with your attack. Because you're not gonna, Beterbiev, it's impossible to think you know, that you're going to be able to stand with him and fight. And then it's also impossible to think that you're going to be able to just move the entire time, because he's going to eventually catch up to you, because he's that kind of fighter. He's like a Triple G kind of guy who stalks the entire time. I don't know, man. I would love to see Callum Smith be able to do it. You know, I know the Smith family. I actually was sparring with Paul some years ago. They're all good fighters, good guys. I just don't know, man. It's going to be a rough situation. And I hope for their sake that, you know, he's prepared and that he knows what he needs to do to go out and win this fight. But in my opinion, man, I just don't know if I can see him keeping Better BF off. I think that's going to be a really, really tough, tall task.
Yeah, really, 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 really intriguing fight. You know, like I said, I've been looking forward to it for a long, long time. You can get Callum Smith at just over 3-1 if you shop around. That's a really good price, I think. And also for the KO, it's about 6-1, I believe. So, yeah, some really interesting prices there. In fact, I think he even goes as big as 7-1 for the KO, which is just really, you know, hard to pass up on. It should be noted that this might be a bit of a surprising statistic here, but Beterbiev has gone at least 8 rounds in 4 of his last 5 fights. So he did 10 rounds with Oleksandr Gvozdik in 2019. He did 10 rounds with Adam Dines in 2021. He did 9 rounds with Marcus Brown in 2021 as well. And then the Joe Smith fight that you mentioned only went 2 rounds, but then he went 8 rounds again with Anthony Yard. So he doesn't seem to be getting the early stoppages like he once was quite a few years ago. Obviously, when he turned pro, he was getting people out in the first few rounds. I think it took him a couple of years to even get past round 4. But most of the time, he's been an early finisher. But I do just think there's a bit of a pattern there. He might have slowed down a little bit. The age, obviously, being 38. And obviously, he trains, you know, he trains very, very hard. You don't know, you know, how much miles are on the clock of his body. He's obviously been, you know, been in the amateurs as well. In the amateurs for years. At the top level. So I don't know, I've just got this feeling that Callum Smith, just with his size, I think he's got a great chin as well. Obviously the one loss to Canelo, you know, it's not like he was dropped in that fight or anything. I don't think, yeah, Smith's never been down. So so yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things at play. Smith has a good chin, so does, but well, I mean, Beterbiev's been down as well, we should remember. So both guys have got good chins. Callum Smith, I think, could potentially be better on the inside and should be better at range. I think the body shots that Callum Smith is so good at, whipping in that left hook to the body, that could play a massive part in this fight to slow down the older man. The only thing going against Callum Smith is just the inactivity. That's all it is. He's had obviously 4 months more inactivity than Beterbiev has had. And like I say, to do 6 rounds in 3 years, Beterbiev has done many rounds in that time. Like I say, most of his fights have been going into the later part of the fight. Yeah, so great fight. The more I'm talking about it, the more I'm kind of thinking that I think Callum Smith could do this, you know. I think Beterbiev will need to stop him to win. I don't know if the cards are going to be properly fair. That's one big if, because it is going down in Canada, the kind of adopted home of Beterbiev. If it's going to be fair, I think Callum Smith could win this on points, could get a stoppage. I think Beterbiev, to fair and squarely win, will need the stoppage. And he's more than capable of getting it. But I think Callum Smith's a hell of a fighter. And he did not at all do himself any favours against Canelo. Everyone thought, he's just a hype job. You know, got in there, didn't really win a round. At times he was looking up at the clock. He couldn't wait till the fight was over. But he didn't really take many risks, and he was just in a shell, and it looked like he came for the payday. And I hate to say that, I like Callum Smith, he's another friend of the show, and I'm hoping he can do this. It'll be a fantastic win, But he can't afford to go in a shell against Beterbiev, and I don't think he will. I've just got this feeling he might be able to pull it off here. But yeah, don't blink. Obviously, Sam Noakes as well earlier on, just, you know, he was saying that he thinks Callum Smith's going to win. I think there's just a confidence, you know. I was going through Twitter the other day and someone tweeted saying that on their timeline, everyone seems to be picking Smith by stoppage. I don't know. There's just a feeling in the air, and I hope that I'm right. Anyway, that's it for that one. Moving now to the very final card. It goes down at the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey, USA. Eddie, you've boxed there, right?
I box in AC, but not necessarily at Boardwalk Hall. At least I don't think.
Okay.
I fought at the Claridge in the AC.
Right.
Yeah. Not for one.
Okay. Anyway, over here, friend of the show, the mama's boy, Dennis Duglin, 23-8. He gets in with Cecil McCullough, who's 23-5. Hadn't really heard of this guy, Cecil McCullough, before, but it's over 8 rounds there at middleweight. I do just want to have a little quick look at him. Obviously, we mentioned Dennis Duglin because he's a friend of the show. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have mentioned this fight. But yeah, this guy... Cecil McCullough, 23-5, never been stopped, 10 KOs to his name. Been in there with quite a few names, actually, by the looks of it. Tony Harrison, Ishe Smith, both guys friends of the show. Giovanni Santillan, Chris Van Heerden. Santillan, obviously, right now is knocking on the door for a world title, still undefeated. And yeah, a bunch of other guys. But not in the best of form. And obviously Dennis Duglin, God almighty, never seems to be able to put momentum together. So yeah, he's lost 2 of his last 3. All the best to him though. Hopefully he wins. He's a good guy, Dennis Duglin. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part 1 we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the lightweight knockout artist, Mr. Sam Noakes. And then in part 2 we did the news and the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 430 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge thank you to this week's special guest, the undefeated lightweight knockout artist, Mr. Sam Noakes. He's from Maidstone. His hands are made of stone. It is, of course, Mr. Sam Noakes. Always good to have him on. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you guys, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. I really mean that. It means a hell of a lot to myself and Eddie. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Enjoy the boxing. Stay safe. And we'll see you all again same time next week.